My name's Mark Commonelli. Can you hear me, mate? He told me this week, huh? Yeah. I'm here because Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life. And I really mean it. I'm not too comfortable with the word it's a miracle. You know what I mean? I'm not too comfortable with that. But Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. It gave me the life that I've got today. And that's why I still come here, because I want the life that I've still got today. Because I know what kind of addict I am. If I ain't in meetings, or I'm not connected to the program, I'd be back out there. And I sit here and I think of my friend, Little Rob, if anyone knew him. Little Sausage, I used to call him. And we was here in November, he was in a third row. And he picked up his 60-day key ring. And by December, he was dead. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, I've been in Narcotics for a little while now. This is my ninth year, so, you know, I just realise the longer I'm around, I suffer from a disease that tells me lies. Just lies to me. That's what it does. I want to kind of tell you where I'm at the moment, because I kind of feel a bit all over the gap. Because about 3 weeks ago, I ain't really got a lot of teeth left. People know that when I smile. And I had a toothache, and I went to the dentist, and I got a new dentist. They give me the wrong diagnosis. And for about a week and a half, I've got a toothache, and it's killing me. So then again, you can't have it out yet, you've got to go and antibiotics. And they, you know, they make me do number twos as well, you know what I mean? It just goes right through me. And can't sleep, yeah? And I'm moving tomorrow. You know, my wife, you know, we've got a place and we're moving. So there's a lot going on for me, do you know what I mean? And it just makes me realise that if that was like, you know, like 9-10 years ago, I wouldn't be able to cope with it. You know, them kind of things, I would use them. I really would. And it's just kind of how I just kind of behave around that stuff, but I'll get to that. But I thought, you know, because it's a long show, I can kind of share about like when I was born, what year, and kind of a bit like that. Yeah. So I was born in 1999. No. I was born in 1967, and I really think about this a lot lately, kind of who I am and kind of how I think and how I behave around other people. And I was thinking, when I was born in 1967, because yeah, you know, in recovery, I asked my mum and dad how they met, and my mum and dad met on a blind date, and within a year they was married. Do you know what I mean? So that kind of tells me something. You know, in that, you know, within a year, you know, my mum doesn't even know this person and she's married to him. You know, and then I came along. The second year they was married, I came along. And my father was an alcoholic. He's in denial about it. He still is. He has stopped. But he, you know, he was in, and I think his denial for him is the consequences of his drinking. And he doesn't want to face the consequences of what he's done to, you know, his children, like me, my sister. And, me and my sister, my other brother and sisters are quite younger. And, you know, to witness that stuff at a very early age, you know, my dad having parties and, you know, people exposing themselves, people taking drugs. You know, I'd be drinking like hell and things like that at parties when I was very young. And, you know, I witnessed my father do terrible things to my mum. And I was in a lot of fear. I really was in a lot of fear. And I asked my mum about that, and she said I had to take medication for that when I was younger. And I always remember for the older people that the Sweeney, when the Sweeney was on and then the News at 10 would come on, I used to dread my dad coming home because he'd be coming home from the pub. I just thought, oh no, my God, you know. I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't sleep. You know, I'd just be in my room waiting for him to come home. And kind of that's how it was, you know, for a long time. And what I done was as growing up then, I kind of shut down. I really did shut down. I just kind of, I didn't understand love. I was confused about love. If my mum and dad loved each other and that was love, I thought, well, you know, that it don't seem right. You know, my mum would try and show me love at times and I just didn't want it. You know, it was, I would cringe at it. I would really cringe at that kind of stuff. And, you know, my dad used to try and show me love financially and things like that. And I kind of grew like that. But, you know, this way of thinking growing up like that with fear and being confused and then kind of not knowing or not even mostly not wanting to look at it and then kind of like even without picking up drugs, you know, I would just kind of have patterns of behaviours, you know, and you know, I'd have rituals and things like that, you know, like I would hold my finger and kick my legs out 10 times and do that like 5 times a day. Or if I used to think about dying, I would really go into a panic. Do you know what I mean? I'd kind of go hysterical. And so I understand I kind of used to try and fix. There was something wrong. Something wasn't right with me growing up, and I used to try and fix it with anything. You know what I mean? And like, even I know people don't like talking about sexual imagery and stuff like that. And you're like, what? You know, masturbation, you know, I try and fix myself, you know, try and feel something. Just try and feel something. And that was just growing up. Or, you know, I used to, when I was growing up, I think, oh, my mum's caught me, do you know what I mean? Or, you know, things like that. That's how I grew up, you know. And that's like, for me, that is all like dishonesty still. Growing up, that's all dishonesty. And there's a bit of shame attached to that, do you know what I mean? That kind of thinking, that's how I kind of grew. You know what I mean? I understand that today. I really do. And I'm just trying to kind of let people kind of know where I come from. And I grew up in the state in Clapham South. And I grew up around people who I thought were role models, who used to pickpocket in the West End. Who had nice clothes and used to freebase cocaine and smoke this brown stuff on the floor, you know. And I kind of grew and I went to like primary school and I was very shut down and like by the time I got to secondary school I wanted to kind of get in with these people and I did, you know. And little did I know what I was getting myself into. But what I realised was every time I was doing it, it really hurt my father. And I thought, you know what, I'm glad it hurt you because you've hurt me for a long time, mate. I'm glad that it hurt you. You know, little did I realise that I was hurting myself. And so I kind of got into that. And yeah, I liked it, really. You know, for a while I did, I liked it, you know, I liked it, but I couldn't wait to go to prison, you know, I just couldn't. It was like, you know, I was initiated. Yeah, where you been, mate? Yeah, I just come out of the big house, bruv. Yeah? Yeah, come, let's go and get a bit of gear. You know what I mean? All that kind of caper, you know what I mean? Well, when I was 16, 17, you know, and kind of just carried on like that, you know, in and out of jail. Always in and out of jail. And my spirit for using and stealing was great, you know. It was very strong, you know, it was very powerful, you know. But as the years went by, it got less and less powerful, you know. just kind of, it just got harder. And what I realised was there was something at the back of my mind trying to come to the forefront of my mind, and it came there when I was about 25, and it kind of said to me, Mark, what you're doing ain't right. And I said, fuck that. And I put it to the back of my mind again, you know, because I didn't want to know. I really didn't want to know. And I just carried on using, you know, and, you know, I liked sticking needles in my arm, you know, I really did. And going back to, like, my friend, you know, I used to, in my using, you know, I used to be living on the streets and sleeping in train stations, and, there's people that kind of got epilepsy and stuff like that, you know, in the rooms, or people that are using. And, you know, I've seen people, you know, inject speedballs and they've got epilepsy. It ain't no good. I've seen them in fits. You know, I've seen them in a bad way. You know, and, I've seen them in a bad way. And I kind of share this thing about, I took my wife to a meeting. She heard me for the first time about 3 months ago. And I was kind of sharing about my disease. And, because I came to a place where, you know, I didn't really want to use, but I needed to use, but I didn't want to go out there to get what I had to do to use. You know, and, I met this guy who was gay. I've got nothing wrong with gay people. And, you know, he wanted to have a turnout with me. You know, and my disease would tell me, you know, Mark, if you act out on this, you know, you're going to get some money from it. Yeah. You're going to feel shame and guilt or whatever. But once you get them drugs in you, that shame and guilt's gone. And that's how I kind of sum up my disease, you know. It wants to take me away from the feelings that are going on for me, like the last 3 weeks, you know, and it doesn't want me to, you know, it didn't want me to cope with feelings, and what Narcotics Anonymous has shown me that it is, it's not just possible, I can do it. I can cope with life on life's terms a day at a time. And so I kind of went on using like that. I could share loads of other stuff about my using, but they're kind of like, they're kind of examples that I wrote they're not from my head, they're from my heart. You know, because my sponsors always said, you know, when you're writing stuff, it's not about just writing, it's about feeling it. You know, and I've wrote examples about powerlessness and stuff like that, but certain ones that I write, and when I know that I feel them, they're the ones that are most important to me. You know, like taking my daughter to a crack house. You know, and I've got 6 children in recovery, and, you know, taking one and just going there constantly all through the day, and then like 9, 10 o'clock at night, my daughter's crying, Daddy, Daddy, I want to go home. You know, I can feel that now. But that's okay to feel that, because I don't want to go back there. You know, I don't really want to go back to that stuff. You know, the joyous thing for me is seeing my little daughter, Skye, my youngest one, you know, she's 18 months, and seeing her in the kitchen this morning before I go to work, and she wants me to chase her and she wants to hide. That's recovery, that's life for me, do you know what I mean? You know, I'm not doing that stuff to my daughter. Yeah, so I kind of went on like that, in and out of jail. Always telling people it's going to be different when I get out. I'm going to change, I promise. Write these letters to my mum or my partner who became my wife. I'm going to do it. I'm not going to use no more. And when I get downstairs to get released, everyone's talking about where they're going to go, where they're going to get a bit of curry and rice, a bit of herring or crack. I'm off. Yeah? Without a second thought, I'm off with them. I've gone. And then wonder what's happened 6 hours later. You know, no drugs, no money. And left with, you know, what's happened, what? What have you done? You know? And, yeah, it kind of went on like that. And I met some guys who I grew up with, who I used to use with, and a couple of them had a lot of playing time. Well, three of them did. And I was petrified of them. I didn't even want to see them on the street. Do you know what I mean? I didn't want to see them. I dodged them. And I was in prison, and they was willing to help me. Because they asked me to come to a meeting. I went to a meeting, and I just thought, God, I can't do this. And but say something happened for me then, it just opened me up a bit, you know. It kind of made me think more that, you know, these people want to help me, you know. You know, I can't understand it. It was just not, I just didn't understand it, but it was nice. I think what it was, yeah, the people thought that I was worth something, because I didn't think I was worth anything. And I started going to some meetings, trying not to use, and I used, and I went back to prison. When I came out, I tried to go to treatment, and I went to a treatment centre. I was 3 months clean outside, and I was going crazy. I was finding it so hard to live with my partner, and I had 3 children then. I just didn't know how to cope. And I just thought, you know what, it's just going to be any day before I use. I don't know when it is, and I had a chance to go to treatment, you know, in Bournemouth. And I went to treatment in Bournemouth. And I'd never done first stage, I went straight to second stage. And yeah, I've done a step 1, 2 and 3 there. I've done a life story. And I'm glad that I've done that stuff. Because in some of my life story, you know, a guy that I used to use with, you know, he killed himself. And, you know, I was surrounded by his family when he died. You know, and I could see how they just wanted to blame me, and I was still using, and it kind of left me in a really bad place, you know, for a lot of years. And I kind of looked at that stuff. No, I looked at it. I saw it for what it was. I got in touch with them feelings, you know, and I wasn't to blame. You know, I wasn't to blame. And, yeah, I wasn't to blame. But it was only through going to Bournemouth and looking at that stuff. And I didn't understand, but, you know, the ability to look at that stuff was because I was going to meetings, you know, I had people that were clean around me. You know, they helped me get through that stuff, you know, because I couldn't have done it on my own. And I came back to London. Well, my wife, I keep saying my wife, but she's my partner then. But she didn't want me to come. She wanted me to come back, but my peers thought that I shouldn't, and I got a resentment against them, and I thought, you know, my partner needs me, and I went back. So I kind of learned all this stuff in my head, and I went back, and I remember, they give you 10 pence when you leave, and they say to you, if you ever need us, call us. And I remember I had this fight with my wife, yeah. You know, and you know, I'm a very insecure person, you know, and I want to know what's going on. What's the matter with you? What have I done? And then she go and lock herself in the room, and I'll be banging on the door. What have I done on the bloody door? And she won't open the door. And I need to know. I need to know now what is the matter with you. Yeah, you got to tell me right now. I can't leave without you telling me what's going on. Because I can't act these feelings. Yeah? She wouldn't. She hit me with a dumbbell. she did. So I went out and I stood at this phone box and I thought, shall I call someone? And I thought about it and I said, nah, it'll be alright, I can have one. It'll be alright, I can have one. And I had 6 months cleaning and I used. And when I used, I can remember it clearly, the obsession and the compulsion to want to use again was there. And it wasn't going nowhere. It was very powerful. It was very, very powerful. It would not leave me alone. Yeah. It was so powerful. And it took me back out there for another 4 months. Begging on the streets, eating off the floor, going off with someone on a one-on-one, speedball 3 times a day. And I remember waking up in the train station like on a Sunday morning and the sun would be shining down and thinking, fucking hell, I can't do this no more. Do you know what I mean? Is this what it's come to? And the guy that I got arrested with, he didn't want to get clean. And he's dead now. Yeah? I don't say this to blight, you know, like put a black cloud on it or whatever, but, you know, this illness does kill, do you know what I mean? It really does. It tells me lies, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's alright. And I remember when I came out of prison, I had prison clothes on because my clothes stunk. I never washed for months. My socks were stuck to my feet. I had blisters on my feet. I didn't brush my teeth. I had blood on my clothes. I came out in prison clothes in a pair of trainers. You know, and my head told me to, you know, I said, go down Brixton and get 3 white tea, bro. Go on, get down here. Go on, go. Go on. I said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't really want to do that. And I've learned some stuff in NA, you know what I mean? You don't have to do this, Mom. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to do this. You know, if you can admit that your powers are drugs, you've got a problem, you don't have to do this, Mom. And what I found was, I got to my mum's and I didn't use. I bloody wanted to use, I tell you, I really did. And I gave my mum the money, said to her, look, Mum, you owe this money, I can't be trusted. And I went to a meeting. And then what happened to me was, you know, this is what happened to me was the next day, this is the miracle. I realised that I could change my old way of thinking. I realised, and I never realised that before. You know, I could change that old way of thinking, and that was that was big for me. You know, really knowing that, you know, I could change my old way of thinking. I didn't have to keep doing this, and that's what I done. I started going to meetings, and I got a good sponsor. I still got the same sponsor. Sometimes I don't think I want my sponsor, but it's because of what he tells me. I don't want to look at what he tells me. Yeah, I start telling myself, oh yeah, I don't want him, he's no good for me, that's a load of rubbish. Yeah, I've got a good sponsor, he just directs with me, tells him, this is what I do, Mark. Yeah. And my sponsor said to me when I was here tonight, Mark, just try and be honest and be real. You know, and that's all I can do, really. You know, my experience. And I went to meetings and I got a commitment. I got a literature commitment. And he got me to a meeting, that meeting every week. And I met, you know, I this one thing about meetings for me is like what I learned then is what I still need to practice now. And that is my problem really sometimes. And I learned that people say, don't pick up the phone. And I had to practice that. Feelings won't kill you, but the drugs will. I had to practice that. You know, I've heard so much great stuff in NA, in meetings, and I try and practice it, what I hear as well in the rooms, because that helps me stay clean at that time, and it helps me to be kind to myself, because, you know, I didn't love myself, and, you know, I realised, it took me a long time, the 12 steps are about, you know, if I surrender to this program, the 12 steps lead me to a place of loving myself. Yeah, and I've experienced all kind of ways of, I'm doing some work with my sponsor at the moment around addiction and stuff like that, and I find myself reading, I mean, the basic text is great, you know, I like reading Recovery and Relapse and More Will Be Revealed, Just For Today, yeah, all of it's good. But, you know, in Recovery and Relapse it says self-will leads us to making decisions based on manipulation, ego, false pride and lust. Yeah, and it goes on to say that, you know, if you're kind of not trying to practice the principle of Narcotics Anonymous, when any emotional upheaval comes along, you're in trouble. Yeah? Your self-will will take you back to them kind of things. Yeah? And it says that you'll be in a place where you're kind of confused with step one. And something else, and I understand that though, because I've been through that in my recovery, you know, and I need to, my sponsor says to me, keeps telling me, Mike, if you haven't got step one, the other steps will not work, and I understand that, you know. I was talking to someone earlier about some stuff, and you know, my sponsor, he said to me, he said, how did you get clean, Mark? And I said, well, you know, I truly admitted that I was powerless over drugs, and my life really did become unmanageable, and it ain't no good for me, do you know what I mean? I really internalise it. He said, so you know, certain things in your life are, they're not good for you. No, I said. He said, well, you see how you got clean and you admitted that you was powerless over drugs and your life become unmanageable? You need to just practice that with the other thing that's going on in your life. Yeah, surrender. It's just like a continuing of surrendering, you know. And I tried to move some furniture last night. I thought I'd try and save myself some money if someone helps me, because I'm moving tomorrow. And I was upstairs, and my mate shouted down, and he said, "Mark," and there was a geezer downstairs cutting the plug off my fridge. And he didn't speak English. What are you doing? I wanted to slap him, really. I wanted to punch his head in, if I'm honest. I'm honest, you know what I mean? I wanted to punch his head in, really. I thought, what is that going to solve? That's just going to make you feel worse. So I thought, you know, leave it. Do you know what I mean? It's a genuine mistake. So then I go upstairs 20 minutes later, I've gone, where's my tumble dryer? My tumble dryer's missing. And I felt sick. You know, then my head started to tell me, I've got to go home and tell my wife now that the lead's cut on the fridge. Someone's nicked the tumble dryer. And it was like being a kid again, going home and telling your mum that you'd done something wrong. It just felt like that. But you know what? I'm an adult. Yeah? Just, you know, I haven't done nothing wrong. I've tried to do the right thing. But my head wasn't telling me that. My head was telling me, Mark, you're no good. Do you know what I mean? You get it wrong again. Look, try to save money. My head wasn't... It just tried to tell me all that stuff. And, so I went over to my wife, and she's really upset, and she cried. I felt like crying as well, really, you know. And I kind of thought about it, and I was going thinking, oh, this geezer. And then I just thought, you know, because that's what it's like for me, you know. It's like, I have to remember that I'm powerless over people, because the energy that I can consume about, you know, fantasizing about someone else, or wanting to kill them, or wanting to act out with them, it just don't do me no good. It doesn't put me in a place of, you know, wanting to love myself. So, you know, slow through the day, I've been trying to wanting to go into self-pity, being a victim, but getting out of that. And just remember, you know, I'm powerless over what's happened. And I'm so glad that I learned that in these rooms, you know, that that I am powerless over people, places and things. And when I forget that, I need to go back to that. Yeah, I could talk about other steps, you know, but I mean, I just kind of think if I'm not truly admitting that, then I can't be open to something to help me. And that's what step two is, coming to believe and trusting in it. You know, I am open today, or I find it a bit hard today. You know, this fear going on, I'm moving tomorrow, and, you know, but it's okay. You know, but yeah, I don't know, I'd have to remember that I'm powerless over people, places and things. Mickey wanted me to share about the service that I do, so I better not forget that. Yeah, because he said that I should share about that. And yeah, I do service, and I love service, and I do a lot of service in prisons and treatment centres. And you heard me do a chair, and that is why I do it. Because I know that this program works. I know that we can change our old way of thinking. I love doing service in hospitals and institutions. And it gets me out of myself. When I think that I'm the centre of the universe or whatever. You know, when I do service, I just try and remember, like, tradition too. There's only one ultimate authority, a loving God. His He may express Himself. Yeah, you know, group conscience, our leaders are but trusted servants. And I'm just a trusted servant. Yeah, and so when I go there, I just remember that and be mindful, be respectful, and just, you know, put my energy into helping people. You know, and I love it because I meet people when they come up to me and say, I remember you. I heard you do a chair. You helped me get clean. And I just think, wow. You know, I've done service in prisons and that, and people just sitting there thinking, I ain't an addict. And then people start sharing, and at the end of the meeting again, they're an addict. And I just think, you know what? This is what it's about. This, the identification. The guy's in the room, he kind of feels safe, he feels that he's being supported, and he can share that he's an addict. You know, I've got to end soon. I thought it was going to be really hard, but I could share for ages. I like singing a song, really. I love NA most of the time. And when I don't, I know that I'm out of sorts with myself. And it's something that I need to work on. You know, I got married in recovery, and, you know, Kai knows that, you know. And I've got 6 children in recovery now, you know, and you know, I'm moving somewhere, and I've asked my mum to look after my kids. I do love them, but, you know, they're kind of fighting and shouting at the moment, and it's just too hard. You know, one's 1.5, my other daughter's 4, my son's 6, my other son's 10, my other daughter's 13, and my other daughter's nearly 18, and it's just kind of different ages, and it's kind of, so I've asked for help, yeah? But I just remember another miracle that happened to me. When I was 6 months clean, I stole off my mum, and I had to live with my mum. My partner wouldn't have me back at first, and my mum gave me to the front door keys to her house again. So I went to meetings for 6 months. I didn't use. I worked a program, and then I realised again, slowly but surely, this program does work. The actions that I put in, my mum had seen it. You know, she'd seen that, you know, that I was doing something. And I just thought, you know what, if it weren't for NA, my mum wouldn't even be giving me them keys. You know, Yeah, I'm just trying to learn to accept myself more for who I am, good or bad. You know, I'm not perfect. And that is my problem, is expectations and want to be in control and be perfect. And that's what it's not about. Yes, I mean, you know, I'd advise anyone to do service. You know, you, a day clean, you can do service, stack chairs, you know what I mean, talk to people. You know, that's what I had to do. If I were, you know, people used to ask for greeters, I just used to greet. I used to be so scared, but I just thought, you know what, I need to try and just face this fear and try and hug someone and say hello. And, but it felt really scary. And so I've done that, and I've just kind of gone on from there, and I've done service in different levels of hospitals and institutions, you know, and it blows me away. You know, if you're new around, keep coming back, and within that, it's changing that old way of thinking, it's going against the grain, you know what I mean? It's, just keep coming back, try and remember that, keep coming back, keep coming back. As my mate Perry says, keep coming back, don't smoke crack. He's joking, but, you know, I believe in him. You know, he's like, I don't know, he's 17, 18 years clean. I believe in him. I believe in my sponsor. There's certain people that I believe in. I find it hard to believe in everyone, but, you know, there's certain, and that's what I need, that's all I need to know. Believing in them helps me believe and trust in this process, because it does work. The evidence is there. All I need to do is look around. You know, so thanks for letting me share. I'll leave it there.